Welcome to the Secret Diary of a Startup, where we embark on a remarkable journey of Perth mum of five, yes, five, an occupational therapist determined to revolutionize occupational therapy assessment wait times. I'm your host, Caroline Lockery, and today we uncover the incredible story of resilience, innovation, and the genesis of OT Me. Steph, our Perth mum, faces the daunting task of balancing family life with a demanding career while striving to make a profound difference in the lives of children awaiting occupational therapy assessments. So, plug in your headphones and prepare to be swept away by Steph's unwavering dedication, relentless determination, and infectious humour as we delve into her thrilling adventure through entrepreneurship, parenthood, and the relentless pursuit of positive change. Welcome to the Secret Diary of a Startup. So, Steph, welcome. Hi.
Hello.
It's great to have you here.
It is great to be here.
Steph, we made it. We did make it. We're very excited. This is the first podcast and first episode, Bright Spark.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought it might be quite fun to just have a bit of a weekly check-in with Steph. So before we kick off the first question and delve into Steph's journey with her startup. Steph, being a mum of five, youngest being three, how many hours of sleep have we had this week?
I reckon average about six a night.
Right. Well, that's not too bad.
It's not too bad.
No, but that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And what about number of meltdowns? Your five precious children.
Probably about 70 million just by the one child.
Oh.
And then if you add the baby into the mix, probably about 70.5 million.
Okay.
Meltdowns. What about my husband? Does that count?
Yeah, I think it's really six children then, isn't it?
Yeah.
Five. Sorry, husband.
Sorry, it's 170.
All right, little wins.
Oh, two little wins in regards to software development.
Can you elaborate?
So had a bit of a setback. So this wasn't a little win, but a bit of a setback in potentially not now using an intern from the uni. But I reached out to some amazing people that I've met through the course of this, who one, a guy that I'll probably elaborate a bit more in another episode, but I actually met him at West Tech Fest, and he just happened to have used to have worked for Microsoft, and we both bumped into each other at the lift looking for the after event booze tent. And then we got talking, both realised that we both had ADHD and didn't want to mingle with anyone else. So just we were all kind of mingled out. So we just chatted for about 2 hours, and he owns a company called Arcana, and he used to work for Microsoft. So he's actually a software developer. So I actually reached out to him, and we're going to meet up and chat about what he potentially can do for my web app. And then I also spoke to another guy today who he's a software developer, and he's going to quote me as well. So they both know I'm a startup. They know I'm doing MVP, which isn't most valuable player, as I used to think it is a minimum viable product. Though they probably will end up being most valuable players in this.
Yeah, most valuable people.
My bad.
Yeah. Fantastic. And current obsession?
Taylor Swift, sorry.
Oh, everybody is doing a Swiftie thing.
Yeah.
At the moment.
Yeah. And her 10-minute version of All Too Well is just, if I play that a lot, it really annoys my 14-year-old because she can't cope with the fact that I like Taylor Swift as well. If I'm not allowed.
And finally, units of alcohol consumed.
Zero so far this
week. That's good.
I know, right?
You. Yes.
Yeah, but it is Thursday, which is my Friday. So after this, I probably will go home and have a glass of something cold and fizzy.
Nice, as you should. Celebration of the first episode. I'm excited.
I'm excited too.
I'm so excited. And so for people obviously that don't know you, Steph, tell us a little bit about yourself before we launch into it.
Okay, so I'm actually British by birth, but I've been here on and off for about 22 years. I'm married to an English guy who emigrated when he was two, so I don't know what he counts as British and Australian. I've got five children, aged between 3.5 and 18. And yeah, I'm an occupational therapist. I've been an OT for 12 years. I've worked in adult services, pediatric services. And yeah, I've been on this journey, this particular journey, probably just shy of maybe 7-8 months, but we'll delve into that in a minute.
We will. Okay, fantastic. So, following on from that, what's led you to this moment, Steph? What inspired you to create your own startup?
Well, I have ADHD and I am not good with monotony and I do get bored a lot in my personal life and in my professional life just by nature. And I really thrive on like the crazy, creative problem solving. Like I'm amazing in a crisis but not amazing doing laundry, that kind of thing. But that's not why I started this. I started it because I used to work in pediatrics about 5-6 years ago. We went back to the UK for a year and I worked at a special school and I worked with severely disabled children and mainstream children as well. And what we were using as resources was literally just photocopies, giving them to parents who pretty much either lost them under the sofa or, you know, they couldn't read the photocopy because we'd lost the original about 50 years previously and nothing was digitalised, like everything was just paper-based. Yeah. And as a mum who's had children go through speech therapy, I am very guilty of losing that piece of paper under the sofa as well, out of sight, out of mind, completely forget that actually I'm supposed to be doing stuff with my child so they can improve. So I had an idea that potentially I could digitalise resources and then I did nothing with that idea for about 5 years. I didn't do nothing for 5 years. We moved back to Australia and then, you know, had another baby and, yeah. But then last year I kind of realised there was still a massive shortage of occupational therapists in paediatrics and a couple of years prior I'd had a couple of mums at the school in the area that we were living in at the time come to me and say, our child needs an assessment, do you know anybody? And at that time I'd just come off maternity leave and gone back to work at the hospital I was working at. So I said, look, I'm happy to kind of, I can dip my toes in, I can help you, I can do some assessments and help you out. And then fast forward a couple of years later to 2023 and the problem hadn't got any better, it had got worse. We'd since moved back up to the Perth Hills and I, again, because I have so many children, I know a lot of parents. So they would like track me down and say, hey, we understand you're an OT. Do you work in PEDS? And I'm like, no, not currently. Currently I'm managing a team of amazing OTs, but they work in older adults. So the need was there. And the more I kind of spoke to people and the more I kind of looked into it, I realized how bad the wait times actually were. And for my own son, who has a formal diagnosis of ADHD, we waited 2 years just to see a paediatrician.
That's too long, isn't it?
We got to a point where I'd forgotten who he'd been referred to. So when the phone call came through, I was like, I had to really wing it. And she's like, do you still want this appointment? I'm like, can you just refresh me?
Yeah.
What's this appointment for? And so everywhere, paediatric services, and that was private practice. So OTs in the private practice, so I'll give you kind of a bit of an overview. So there's 4.8 million children in Australia. 1.8 million of those children have at least one chronic health condition that an OT can treat. There are, I think, 27,650 registered OTs, and 50% of those work in private practice, but not necessarily with children.
Yeah.
So if you look at the numbers, they just don't add up. And unfortunately, it's still 12-week wait to get on a wait list in private practice. In the public system, it's way worse. Like in metro areas, so, you know, like suburbs near Perth, mm-hmm. It's 12-plus months to get on a wait list.
That's crazy.
It's crazy. So, and in rural areas, it's 18-plus months. And that might mean that you actually don't get to see someone in person as well. You do telehealth, depending on where you are. Or you run the risk of booking something in 18 months in advance and then just hoping your kid's not sick or the OT's
yeah, that's
not
right.
sick.
Exactly.
So that kind of all resurfaced probably February, March time last year. And I did start to think, okay, so how, as an OT, how can I solve this problem? But equally, I wasn't in a position financially to jump ship from my current job as OT team leader at the hospital. I was burning out. Like it isn't just me that's burning out. Hence, a lot of us are kind of leaving hospitals because after COVID, obviously financial pressures in private hospitals as well as the public system has led to some questionable staffing cuts to allied health, which then added pressure to other teams, added pressure to then myself as a team leader and everything. However, you know, I also craved the change. Like I was really kind of like, okay, I've been working here for 3 years now. I've kind of built a really great team, and you are only as good as your team. And we'd got to a really great point. And then I could just see things starting to crumble around me through no fault of my own or my immediate team or my manager. And I just went, okay, maybe it's time for a change. Like, done what I can anyway. But I had two amazing seniors that worked in my team, the two Amys who I am still really good friends with. And I was like, loyalty to them, loyalty to my manager who had been hugely supportive through some personal challenges that I'd had the previous year. And also we're building a house. So financially I couldn't jump ship to go back to private practice without kind of going, okay, I need to build a caseload. So things needed planning, and I didn't have the kind of financial choice, I suppose, at that point. But and also I kind of so I had this crazy idea, but I also have a huge imposter syndrome, which actually a lot of females I speak to have it. And you know, we'll delve into that in probably another podcast. So I had this little voice in my head going, why do you think you can fix this? Like, seriously, like it hasn't been fixed as yet. So how why do you think you can do it? But it was still kind of building, and I kind of thought, I need to do something with this. Like, I can't just, you know, there's something in this. And the more I spoke to people, the more it kind of unfolded and people went, nah, you need to go for this. So I got in touch with Curtin University and reached out to their innovation team because I'd previously spoken to someone about a very different idea that I'd had, and he'd kindly given me some time. And anyway, so I knew that they did innovation stuff at university, and I knew that they really had some really good programs. So I reached out, but forgot that I'd reached out.
And as you do with all your busy life and two jobs and five kids.
Yeah, and I completely – so this was like June time. I have this phone call from this beautiful girl going, oh, it's a typo in your email. So the session's tomorrow, and she's talking like I, again, should know what she's talking about. So because my working memory is shit, I just kind of was winging it and went, okay, cool. So here's my email. I'll stay on the phone while you send me the information. And just so happened that I was working from home that day. So I fitted it into my day. I had some meetings in Perth and went along, pitched two ideas, one that was kind of very different and then this one. And they were like, yeah, you need to apply. So the actual application I did, now my he wasn't even three then. So my son's quite demanding, my youngest son. He does not like to share me, whether that be with my phone or with other children. He's got marginally better. Being the fifth one, you'd think he'd be just bringing himself up, but no. So I actually did the application from my mobile and didn't really reread it till I'd sent it and submitted it.
Attention to detail, Stephanie.
Yeah. So I was kind of like, I'm not going to get in anyway. Like that little voice going, I don't even know why you're bothering. But what I'd actually, when I reread it, I'd actually put myself as a pedantic OT, like a pedantic occupational therapist, not a pediatric one. I was like, well, it could have been a worse word. So pedantic is fine. And I'm actually surprised it was legible at all because Dylan literally was batting my phone off me as we were watching Bluey or Peppa Pig or something equally amazing. And anyway, so that kind of is what happened, and I completely just put it out of my mind, carried on working, didn't do anything else. It was just literally an idea. And then come July, I get an email, and I remember just bursting into tears going, finally, someone believes in me enough to kind of go, yeah, come along, have a scholarship, $3,500 scholarship. You can do an intensive week. And in my head, I'm like, this is amazing. Like, this is the next step to greatness or something. And yeah, that was pretty much how it all began. And then I had a couple of months, I think we had some pre-work that I probably left to the last minute because I do all my best work at the last minute. And then, yeah, had the roller coaster of my life that first week of September. So first week of September to now, what, middle of March, I've gone from just an idea to actually recording and digitalizing all my content and talking to software developers.
Yeah. So, Steph, you're going to have to tell us a little bit. What is this app?
Okay.
What is this business? So we know it's called OTME.
Yeah. So basically, the idea has kind of not pivoted, but it's been refined. So what it is initially will be a web application that is accessible like via desktop or via the web, like App Store and Android. And basically parents can type into a search bar issues that have been identified with their child. It will then filter from a back-end catalogue of interventions that I would prescribe anyway for children and teenagers. And basically then, for better word, kind of spit out a intervention plan for their child with the content, so digitized content. So they will then be able to follow along to videos, whether that's gross motor, fine motor, exercises, or there will be some like digital downloads as well, so they can print out all the fine motor resources they need. Eventually, what I really want to do is expand it to include mental health stuff as well. And there'll be education for parents as well, you know, how to potentially, you know, put a sensory diet for their child to help with emotional regulation. It's not going to be an exhaustive list of what OTs treat in pediatrics, because it just can't be. But my aim is to bridge that gap between wait times for occupational therapy services for children. So it empowers the parents and empowers the children to actually get ahead of that, any issues they've got, because early intervention is key. Any clinician working in allied health and working with children, absolutely early intervention is key. And even 12 weeks in the span of, say, a five-year-old's life is huge.
It's massive, because the development,
yeah,
you know, it's so so big,
yeah,
in those early years.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you were talking before earlier about wait times being 12 months and 18 months regionally, that's a huge amount of time.
I mean,
there's so many developmental
and it's a huge
milestones
health
in that, yeah, amount of time. And so that'd be so concerning,
yep,
as a parent,
yep,
to not be able to, yep, action that and get your child the support they need.
And that's parents that potentially are kind of can afford to go see a private practice OT, right? So if you can't afford to go see a private practice OT, so then you go on the wait list for the public system. But then what if you can't afford to get yourself into Perth? What if you can't afford to get yourself to the next biggest city? So, okay, so then what they will do is then potentially coach you as a parent to then kind of assess or do stuff with your child. It's just, there's a huge health inequalities when it comes to children. And it doesn't seem to be getting any smaller. It actually seems to be getting bigger. And I don't want to replace occupational therapy interventions, assessments, you know, like I am one. I know how valuable we are. But equally, if I can just bridge that gap so a child isn't any further behind but actually is further ahead, you know, all the therapeutic activities that I would do with children or prescribe to children can only do good and will only add value to their skill sets, will only empower parents to be able to help with their child's self-regulation, help with behavioural stuff. Because it isn't, you know, if you look at a child holistically, you look at them as a whole, the whole little person, right? So it's not just that one little thing that they've got going on. It will be linked to whole other stuff.
Yeah,
it has a huge knock-on effect to the rest of their life. Their, you know, their occupations as a child, so the play, the education, the social side things, being, you know, their occupations of self-care stuff, being a sibling, or, you know, it's huge. So I don't want to replace OT, but I certainly want to help children who either can't access it or are just on those, yeah, ever-growing wait lists.
And so tell me, you mentioned before, I mean, obviously you've just talked about all the services and the things that parents can access through your OTME app. Do parents need an actual diagnosis first from a doctor or similar to come and...
No.
Register or,
no.
You know, sign up for these.
So while this isn't a diagnostic app, it is absolutely not. And as an occupational therapist, I cannot diagnose anything formally anyway. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty well versed in understanding, you know, a child potentially has ADHD, potentially ASD, et cetera, et cetera. But I cannot diagnose anything. So even if your child wants to get ahead, wants to practice some gross motor skills, because before you even think about fine motor skills, you've got to get kind of the foundational gross motor skills. That will benefit your child. And my aim is to make it independently usable from a child age 5 and up. So once mum or dad or carer or whoever has logged them in, mm-hmm. they can then, my kids are so much better at tech than me. Like my nearly 9-year-old, he's just like a whiz on the iPad, which is quite frightening, really. Like I said, I feel like my grandma doing this podcast, trying to understand the buttons. What did you ask me?
it's too much in our heads.
It's too much.
Do you need an actual diagnosis or can it? I'm a parent of two. My 6-year-old is vibrant, I'll say.
Feisty.
You know.
Independent.
So I could log on to your OTME, mm-hmm. have a search for something that I think might benefit my daughter.
Yep.
And then straight ahead start using things.
So once you've signed up, and I haven't nutted out whether there's going to be membership tiers yet, I really don't know. It will be a subscription, and a monthly subscription, cancel anytime kind of thing. My biggest thing is I want to empower parents, mm-hmm. and I want kids to be able to use it. And eventually there will be some gamification. Kids love a gamification, mm-hmm. collecting. Reading eggs.
Yeah. Ding, 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 ding.
And then, I can buy an avatar that looks like my long lost granddad or something. So eventually it'll be a lot more child friendly, but pretty much there'll be a catalogue, a database of things that, like I said, that would be prescribed anyway for certain things. It will filter through and then make suggested activities for their child to participate in, and pretty much as soon as they're logged in, as soon as they've signed up, they can access activities.
Right, and then so they have their own kind of area where it would have your history of what you're going through, what you're working on.
And the aim is to eventually for it to be able to, you can monitor how many minutes the child has spent watching the video. I did it, mum. It's like, well, actually you did 2 minutes and 30 seconds and the video is 8 minutes. So I know you're telling me porcupines here. Mm-hmm. So eventually there should be some monitor. There will be some monitoring stuff in the background. Mm-hmm. But my aim is to make it so fun that kids actually want to do it. So it's not, so it is like the reading eggs or the mathletics. They don't really realize they're actually doing some really good stuff for themselves. They're just having fun.
That sounds awesome. And the content to put into the app, mm-hmm. obviously you have all of your wealth of experience.
Yeah.
Where are you drawing that from?
So
it sounds like this could be huge. Where do you stop?
Where do you stop?
Yeah.
So I've narrowed it down to a list of, chronic, I don't want to say illnesses because it's not, but chronic conditions that, and then the things that I treat from that. So, for example, ADHD. I get a lot of kids coming through with diagnosed or undiagnosed ADHD, but then that opens up a whole, not one child is built the same. They may have the same diagnosis, but their symptoms are very different. Mm-hmm. So I have pretty much a whole catalogue of resources that I draw from and then put together for that child. So what I've done is everything that I've kind of gathered over the years, I've started to digitalize, put my own branding onto it, and then eventually what I'm now doing is I'm actually recording content. I've got these fabulous dancers that and this is such a Perth kind of story. So everyone knows everyone, right?
Yes.
In WA.
1.6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, pretty much. So a really good friend of mine that I met on a plane when I was 19 and she was 24. Where were we? Abu Dhabi or somewhere. Anyway, that's a story for another time.
Yeah.
But we've stayed really good friends and she owns a dance school. I'll give them a little shout out, Bounce Dance School. She's also an amazing dancer and she is a high school dance teacher as well. So I reached out to her and I was like, hey, Mel, do you have anyone that they have to be over 18 so I don't have to do all that, you know, disclaimer, all that kind of stuff? And she just gave me some unicorns. So basically one's just a newly qualified physiotherapist and she's a professional dance teacher as well. Brilliant. I know. Another one is a speech pathology student. Yeah. Another one is a teacher, like a student teacher. And another one is a psychology student
who just happens to be
black belt in Taekwondo as well. So,
as you do.
Yeah, so we've got these four amazingly talented dancers who are young, energetic. They've got way more energy than me, who get what I'm trying to do. And the best thing about these ladies is that I'm literally bribing them with food and... I think it was M&M's, crispy M&M's and some questionable chips last time. And like I took them out for pet. Like, so they just want to be on board with this because they know that this is such a beneficial thing, which they're just amazing human beings and I can't thank them enough. But that's the kind of Perth story. It's like, well, I've reached out to someone and that's kind of what I've had literally probably from the first day at Curtin doing the Ignition program. Was the networking, and I have networked my little heart out, and I did get a bit of network fatigue probably a couple of weeks ago. I was like, yeah, I'm a bit over coffeeing with people, but then I've kind of, but I've made some amazing connections, and the, oh, how do you say it? So the generosity of people I don't know
who are willing to help,
you know, in exchange. Again, coffee, like coffee is my currency, and their wealth of knowledge and their time and the effort, and then they've like linked me up with other people, and then I've reached out to perfect strangers who have kind of gone, yeah, of course, I'd love to meet up with you. I have to do a WebEx though because I'm in New Zealand or wherever, but they've carved out time for someone they don't know. So I've just been 100% blown away the generosity of people within the ecosystem of the innovation startups in Perth, especially.
And entrepreneurship. Entrepreneurs.
Yeah. And female founders. And like I can't say enough how the female founders that I've met so far work so hard to be heard and to get to where they are. I have learned so much in the short space of time for some really, really strong badass women in this industry. Yeah, so
amazing.
It is.
Shout out, it was the Female Founders Day on the 12th.
Which
so
was
shout out to all the female founders
and now
all
I'm
over the globe.
Testing my cognition memory. That was 2 days ago, yes?
Yes, Tuesday.
Yeah,
yes.
Which feels like a lifetime ago.
Yeah, when <you're, laughs> it does.
When you're a working parent.
Exactly. So, I mean... You know, you just mentioned before about these dancers having more energy, which I'm sure they do. They're also 20 years younger than us, Steph, so that's just reality. But how do you – I mean, because it's so exciting that it would just give you energy and motivation anyway to bring this app to the public and to help children and parents.
Yeah.
Like that's, I would think, motivation in itself to keep that energy up. But – how do you do balance this? Because I know that you work two jobs, you have the five kids, and to keep going and balancing all of that with family life.
The sanity, I don't think, has ever really been there. Like, I think
you once need a bit of crazy to get ahead.
And once you go past three kids, like the crazy is just norm, right?
Yeah.
I will openly admit that probably the last 2 weeks I've been feeling really burnt out, but I have just finished up one of my jobs. I'm still kind of working my, obviously back in private pediatrics. I'm also doing some older adult assessments as well on the side because financially we're building a house. We are almost 3 years in and we're still not in. So that's probably more the burnout is the financial pressures that my family are under at the moment versus the burnout from this. Because I actually like, I was chatting to someone not that long ago who's in this and I was like, I don't think I can go back to prior to this.
No.
Like this, I love this. I love the creative process. Like it completely, all the stuff that makes me, I can use. Oh, my stomach's rumbling, sorry. I haven't had dinner. Again, being a mum of five, you forget to eat. And so I've kind of channeled all of, I guess, what I would do as hobbies into this. And also, I think I need to say I've met a lot of entrepreneurs with ADHD as well. So I think there's definitely traits of us out there, because we can spin lots of plates. We thrive on chaos, and the creative stuff that has gone into it, just the branding. Like, I loved all that kind of stuff. The photography, learning videography. Like, I'm learning about lighting. I'm learning about 4K videoing and all this stuff. And it's all trial and error, but I'm loving it because it's like, oh, I'm learning a new skill. So from that point of view, I'm burnt out more from just everything else that's going on in my life, not necessarily the startup.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So burnout is real, and I think that we probably need to dedicate a whole podcast to, like, episode to that.
Yeah.
Because I think burnout is, yeah. It's just a part of the process, and you've got to be really careful.
You really have to manage your energy, not your time.
Yeah, and where you channel that energy.
Absolutely. And so on that, are there any learnings that you could share?
Inadvertently, I've become very agile in how I manage things. Now, agile is kind of a project management term as well as agile, you know. So basically in a nutshell, my understanding is you try something, if you fuck it up, you just try something else. Hang on, I know you're gonna
that
try
one out later.
So lean design as well. So I think the number one learning from Ignition was don't spend any money, because there's no point until you know that A, you've tested your idea. B, you've got customers out there that actually want to invest in your product or service, and that you've actually got a problem to solve, not just a solution. So I've learned a lot about business practices. I'm still learning. There's a lot of stuff that I wouldn't even have known what that was. And I guess lean design is the biggest one that I really try to. And I kind of, like, I have bought some photography equipment that I've kind of said, oh, yeah, that's definitely a business expense because I need it. But equally, I haven't told my husband either. And then he kind of goes, is that a new
out
camera?
Out of the bag now, Steph. Well done.
He was like, where did that come from? I'm like, well, I needed it. And then, yeah, I think I just ranted on for like 5 minutes while I needed it. He lost interest and walked off.
I'll have to remember that one. I'll have to try that with my own husband.
You just ramble on, and eventually they lose interest in going for something to eat.
Yeah.
A bit like children. I've learned a lot. As we go through the podcast series, we will dedicate each episode to, I suppose, a business
learning.
Also bring some guests on as well that are far more experienced than me. Yes, it is. We've got we actually have someone who works at Curtin on the innovation team. I'm really excited to bring her on because she's gold. I've also got another lady who I haven't asked yet, but I'm pretty sure she'll come on board as well. She's another real kind of, amazing female founder. And also some fellow Ignition females are going to come on and talk about their startup and where they're at and how they came about and all that kind of stuff.
Their experience, their ups and downs. I can't wait for that. It's going to be great. And so it's been a pretty crazy September to March time, as we've talked about, and also with everything else on top of that. Can you give me just one?
Mm-hmm.
I know that's going to be hard, but just
you've
one.
You've met me, right?
memorable moment or milestone in this journey so far?
Yes. So a couple of things, and I'm not going to name them because I
did say one, Steph.
Oh, sorry.
Couples.
But it's the same. Okay. Oh, look, I'm not good at math, all right? Two people, very experienced people, gave me some hugely complimentary, huge compliments basically to other people and to myself about me as a startup founder, which was really validated the effort that I've put in and the work that I've put in and really reignited why I'm doing it. And there's, you know, a multitude of reasons why I'm doing it. But they were, you know, so I think, I guess it's not a milestone, but it really reignited why I'm doing it, and that actually I'm on the right path, and that actually I do work really hard and I am really committed to seeing this succeed. And that also made me go, I can't go back to, I love working for myself in private practice, and I also love this kind of stuff, the startup stuff. So I'm just like, I don't want to go back to what I was doing before.
No, you've embarked on this journey now.
No.
So that only weighs forward.
Yeah. Yeah. And hopefully I'm successful so then I don't have to eat my words and go, oh, yeah, I'm going back to a day job that I really.
No, there's definitely a need. You know, I think even just getting it out there and the exposures to other parents that probably don't even know where to turn to, don't even know where to start. They might have a niggling about their child, but they just have no clue of even where to start with it.
No.
And so this is a really non-confronting, helpful, easily accessible.
Well, that's my biggest thing as well is
source.
Parents are time-pressed anyway. And, like, you've got the added pressure, and that's what I'm seeing more as well, the added pressure that schools are putting on their teachers, the teachers are then putting on the children, and then the pressures are on the parents. There's such high expectations for children to be hitting all these milestones, which I don't genuinely think is right. But, you know, the amount of parents that come to me, oh, my child's not the same as that child, or... you know, the teachers pointed out X, Y, and Z, and it's like they're really worried that their child is broken. Well, actually, this kind of shows to them that your child isn't broken, actually. There's a huge range of normal. However, you can work on these things. These are fun. These are skills that your kid needs to develop. So, yeah, you can kind of help them along a little bit. It's not going to break the bank, and you can do it in the comfort of your own home. So you don't have to then, you know, drive to the therapy, you know, pick the other siblings up, try and give them an iPad that are in the weight room. You know, like there's a multitude of benefits for being able to do this kind of stuff in your home. And I think the biggest one for parents, and as a mum of five, I know that's kind of an excessive amount of children, but are you like having to try and drag other kids to other appointments, having to try and, you know, all the extracurricular.
I can't even do it with two.
Yeah, but yeah, I know. I mean... The extracurricular, I mean, I have to give a shout out to my husband because he holds a lot. Since I've started on this, he's held a lot down in terms of like the cooking and probably doing more drop-offs than he's ever done, which I think has shocked his system a little bit. You know, the daycare drop-offs. What do you mean I have to pick him up as well? Kind of like, well, yeah, like he can't walk home. He's three. But but, like, he has come to the party because I wouldn't be able to do this without him.
No. Yeah, we all need our cheerleaders.
Don't get me wrong. He drives me bonkers and doesn't quite understand, I don't think, what I'm trying to do because he's not in my profession. Plus being married to someone with ADHD, I think he probably needs a medal for that because I change my hobbies like I change my socks.
So what advice would you give to other mothers or OTs who are considering launching their own startup? Or females, it doesn't necessarily have to be mothers, but
yeah, females. So female founders, we need more of us, and we need men to invest in us in terms of not just money, but in time. I think it's something ridiculous, like 1.6% of founders are female that get venture capitalist funding. 1.6%, terrible, right? So it puts a lot of women off. They're like, well, what's the point of me working really hard? Because when I get to a point where I need money to either scale or to just get them off the ground, it's like, well, I'm already battling like 98.4%. Yeah, we can fact check that later before this goes to air. The men are going to get it over them. Like... so I guess my thing is, you know what, we have been fighting for equality for years as females, and I think sometimes we make excuses for the men in our life, or oh, he's just, you know, oh, he's just a man, or he's just, No, if you want to carve out time for yourself, whether you're a wife or a mother or a partner or single or whatever, and you've got something that you want to go for, you only got one shot at life.
That's right.
Like, what have you got to lose?
That's right.
Especially like the encouragement. Yeah, you're 100%. And the encouragement is lean design, right? So, and I keep harping on about that because they don't want you to invest your money in just an idea. Like, you've got to go through all the other bits and pieces that don't cost anything. The customer validation does not cost you anything. Just cost you your time and finding people to go, look, I think there's a problem I can solve. Do you have that problem? And would this solve it?
Yeah.
And, you know, I think also people have got to realize that it's not a walk in the park. It is kind of, you've got to give a lot to doing a startup. It is hard work, but it's so much fun. Like, I've met so many amazing people that have not only inspired me, but actually kind of lifted me up as a human. Not just their generosity, but their intelligence, like the conversations we've had. And, you know, even just talking about female founders having to battle, you know, just to kind of go, hello, I'm here, this is me, please invest in me. But the more of us there are, the more loud we're going to be.
Absolutely.
And the more heard we're going to be.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the time as women, we sacrifice a part of ourselves when I know I did when I had kids, and it's supposed to be temporary, but I think sometimes you get lost in the tiredness. You get lost in the...
Oh, there's a monumental shift. And
huge.
You know,
but you're not really prepared for it, right?
No, because it's not something that seems to be kind of almost tangible or talked about. Or you can put words around it, but there's, you know, and this can be another podcast episode probably. But there's a massive loss, a sense of identity.
Yep.
And there is I've found a grieving process.
Yeah, definitely.
Of who you were to who you are now,
and it's up to you who you are now. It's not up to anyone else. Like, your life has changed, and you may grow, but like, I look at the person I was when I had my baby at 22. I was a baby still. My life was still quite. I kind of had hopes and ambitions, but they were put on hold. And then when she was born, I was like, she needs a better life than I can give her right now. So what am I going to do? All right, well, I'm going to have to go to uni. Okay, what am I going to do at uni? So you kind of, if you're willing to accept that things are going to be hard work, nothing's impossible. Mm-hmm. You know, I moved up to London with her when she was 2. I was, you know, to go to university. I didn't know anyone in London. I've got a shout out to my aunt and uncle who were like guarantors on my flat and helped me out, fed me, you know, let me cry on their shoulder and stay at their house when things got tough. But that was huge. Like, people are like, what are you doing? Why don't you just stay living where you are and bring, you know, and think of, and I'm like, no, because I've got hopes and ambition, and it's going to take work. It's not impossible. And I guess that's what I would say. It's nothing's impossible.
Nothing's impossible. You've just got to give it a go, and you've just got to take that first step and then the next step.
And then the next. We need innovators. Like, they're saying, you know, we need innovators. We need problem solvers. The rate tech is going, the rate that everything is evolving in the world, we need probably more female problem solvers as well, and more.
And so... I've heard all about this busy, amazing, energetic, tiring, inspiring journey. So with everything that's already on your plate, Steph, why a podcast? What motivated you to share the secret diary of your startup?
Okay, so I wanted to journal my journey. Oh God, I feel like I should
journey
be on X Factor.
My journey
of how I got to here and then beyond, because it's not the norm of, like, you know, I didn't 2 years ago, if someone said, oh, you can have a startup, I'm like, see if I can fit that in. Well, it turns out I can fit in. So now I want to kind of, and all the stuff that I've learned, I actually really would like to tell people what I've learned, because I've learned it in a short space of time, and I've made some mistakes, but trial and error, like the agile thing. And I just think this is an amazing way of, even if no one listens to this podcast, I can listen back to it. I can bore my children with it and then my grandchildren with it and go, look what I did. Like, yeah. Look what I did. And they'll be like, I'm not listening to that. It's 45 minutes long, Mum.
But it's sharing your learnings, right? And it's sharing insights. And for other, you know, perspective and inspiring, you know, female that want to get into a startup and start their own gig, you know, having a bit of almost not a shortcut, but listening to others that have already embarked on the journey and getting their insights and their learnings.
Yep.
And a bit of their advice
It's quite cathartic as well, like having a chat to your friend about what you've been doing. Because, like, yep. I don't get really to debrief with anybody. And when I do, it's normally my husband who's got his headphones in and watching Formula One. So he's not really listening anyway, bless him. He's tired. He's worked a whole day. He's also parented, you know, neurodivergent kids, which, is not easy. But just talking and, I think sharing our stories really helps other people kind of find their own and actually really look deeply into, okay, what's my story? And maybe if this inspires, you know, not necessarily mums, but other females or, you know, young people, older people that, like, I'm 40. I turned 40 last year. Like,
I remember.
Yeah, that's how we met.
That was our meeting. That's definitely in a story for another time.
Not today. Just people, you know, if they can find themselves a little bit, even it might not be a startup, but it might be just something that they get inspired by and go, you know what, I really wanted to do this for years.
I'm going to give it a crack. Yeah.
So what if I fail?
What have you got to lose, you know? And I think that's, you know, I say that to myself as well all the time. What have I got to lose?
Yeah.
You know, and if there's nothing to lose, so just...
There isn't. And you know what I've learned?
Back yourself.
Yeah. 100% back yourself, and if you fail,
it's a learning.
And the phrase is if you're going to fail fast and then move on, and actually being resilient, because I quite sensitive in the fear of failure, right? The fear of failure is like, well, if I don't try something, I can't fail at it. And I've learned that, well, actually, if you don't try something, you're not going to move forward. Nothing.
No, and you'll never learn.
And
the growth. There's no growth.
No.
There's no growth.
Absolutely not. Listen to us. We're so philosophical.
Well, that's true.
We haven't even had wine. You imagine if we had wine?
No, I know.
I forget what I'm talking about. I need a reminding. Have I told you about when I started to drink coffee? I didn't drink coffee till I had my fifth baby.
I don't know how you didn't get through that. Like, you got through all of those early years. I didn't drink coffee until I moved to Melbourne.
So
that was 2009.
And Melbourne does good coffee.
And I swear to God, I remember having this first coffee and I was at this new job and I remember shaking so badly. I thought that I'd taken like some drugs or something. Walking to the printer and just go, I was like, I don't think I can handle this.
Oh gosh.
It was just a latte, pretty much milk. One shot of coffee,
and now you're like a four short girl.
No.
Espresso, please.
Two coffees a day, but yeah.
Yeah, so I went back after Dylan was 5 months old and was still breastfeeding. So it was like pumping in the office that fortunately locked on both sides. So, yeah, people didn't want to cop an eye for that. And then it was my colleague who was like, I'll tell you what, I'll get you a mocha. Let's try a mocha. So it's like the gateway.
Yeah.
but apparently they'd misheard her. And I remember I was literally shaking because I think they'd done like a quadruple shot or something. It was crazy. And she's like, I'm not really quite sure what this is, but good luck. And then that was the gateway drug. That was caffeine. And now I'm a two coffee a day girl.
It is.
Because green tea doesn't cut it. Because apparently green tea has as much caffeine in, if not more, but I can't.
I've heard if you eat an apple at the time you would normally have your coffee in the morning,
does
the same thing.
A placebo. That's a placebo, surely. There's no caffeine in apples.
I've heard this. No, I've heard that. No, but it has the same effect. I've heard it. I'm sure I've heard of it. Maybe it was Dr. Carl on Triple J or something like that.
So a reasonable source, definitely.
A reasonable source, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Well, Steph, This has been fun. It's been an experience. We've given it a crack.
We've given it a crack.
We're having a go. And I really would love, or Steph would love, if you've got any questions or any comments,
yes,
get in touch. So, Steph, let us know your Insta and your website.
My Insta's at multicoached, so feel free to direct message me. And my website is multicoached.net. So you can add a www. on it, or www.multicoached.net, and at multicoached on Instagram and at multicoached on TikTok as well.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you are listening and you've got some questions for Steph, or some comments, or you want to learn a little bit more about OT Me, send
just
her a message.
Just get in touch. Yeah, I'd love to get in touch,
because it would be also fantastic if we can address some of the questions.
100%. I'd love some questions
through this channel.
And like, you know, OT related to children, or you want any advice, I'd absolutely love to help some people, or even just point them in the right direction. If you have any questions, please contact me.
Fantastic. Well, thanks, Steph. It's been fun.
It has been fun.
So next up, episode 2, we're going to delve into defining the vision for OT Me.
Yes. Which there was a lot of defining. Still happening.
And refining.
Refining, not defining.
Defining, refining.
Yeah.
Redefining. Again and again.
All right.
Awesome, Steph. Thank you.
Till next time.
Ciao.
Thank you so much for listening and giving us your time. A big thank you to our wonderful host, Caroline Lockery, for guiding me through our first episode of The Secret Diary of a Startup. In the next episode, we'll delve deeper into the mission and vision of my startup, OT Me, where I discuss my aim to revolutionize and increase the accessibility of occupational therapy for children. Stay tuned as we explore how my innovative platform aims to empower parents and their children alike to take control of their occupational therapy journey like never before. Until then, have a great week. And this is just the beginning of an exciting, innovative adventure with OT Me. Follow me on Instagram at multicoached and multicoached.net for updates and OT tricks and tips for parents and carers. See you next time.